The NBA media rights story continues to unfold as we head into, I guess this is the second or third week since the exclusive negotiating window expired. I mean, time is just flying. And there's more details about Amazon, ESPN, WBD, Comcast since we last did this podcast. So welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. This is John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's just jump right into the discussion about NBA media rights. The latest reporting by John Arand of Puck is that Amazon will be getting the play-in tournament and in-season tournament, as well as a conference final every other year, while ESPN will, in addition to getting the NBA finals every single year, get the conference final, or a conference final, every single year as well. So that leaves that WBD B package with the All-Star game, some regular season games, playoff games, and only a conference final every other year, which means whoever wins the rights for that package of $2.5 billion a year will at some points be ending their season in the second round. You'll be paying $2.5 billion and have no games past the second round of the playoffs. It's a crazy deal. But my expectation, based on all of the reporting so far, is that that B package for WBD was supposed to be similar in price, maybe even lower in price, who knows, than what Amazon is paying for its C package. Amazon is paying $1.8 billion and ESPN is paying $2.6 billion. That's a pretty significant difference. That's nearly $1 billion worth of difference, which makes sense because ESPN is getting the NBA finals every year and a conference final every single year. That justifies paying nearly $1 billion more than what Amazon is paying. It does not justify paying, you know, $1 million more or whatever, $100 million more than what WBD or Comcast is going to pay. So the only explanation to me is that WBD was going to be able to bid maybe $1.8 or $1.9 billion, maybe even less, maybe $1.6 or $1.7 billion for what is frankly a pretty unimpressive set of rights. And then Comcast came in and said, no, we'll pay $2.5 billion for it. We'll bump that price up by $1 billion. And now WBD is in a set of circumstances where they have to either lose the NBA or overpay severely for something that is not, that package is absolutely not worth $2.5 billion. They are between a rock and a hard place, and Comcast can certainly afford that overpay. WBD probably cannot. Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
You set this up perfectly, John. Comcast as a business is just in a completely different place than Warner Brothers Discovery is right now. WBD is just saddled in debt, and a huge overpay for NBA rights, really, it's not necessarily in the playbook for them. And that's why, without trying to be too conspiratorial here, John, I'm trying to figure out Comcast's motives with such a huge bid. Especially with it kind of leaking to the media without any sort of actual framework agreement in place. Is this something they're doing to try to force an overplay onto WBD, knowing that, hey, this offer as it stands, we're fine with it, we can afford it. The NBA, of course, is a valuable property to have. And typically by the end of the terms of these deals, $2.5 billion might not seem like as much of an overpay as it does now. Or is it really like they're gambling on, you know, forcing WBD to match a $2.5 billion deal and, you know, quite frankly, you know, take them out of any other type of media rights negotiations well into the future?
Yeah, well, I think it's the latter. I don't think Comcast needs the NBA. If they did, they'd be trying to force out ESPN to get the finals. The fact that they're fine just getting the All-Star game and, you know, a conference final every other year, they're just being troublemakers right now, really. That's really all it is. They recognize that they had enough money to make life very difficult for WBD. If they don't get the NBA, I think they'll be fine with it. If they do, it's content for Peacock. And again, they can afford $2.5 billion, and, you know, I mean, they can. And there's a lot of upside as well. I mean, you get back into the NBA, maybe the next negotiation in about a decade, you can, you know, get more rights, or who even knows how this is going to play out. There might be, it's 11 years, but the NFL's term is 11 years too, but they have a look in, you know, after year seven. So there's no downside for Comcast. There's nothing but downside for WBD. Either they pay way too much money for this package or they lose the NBA. And I mean, I guess Comcast, one conspiratorial thing is that we know Comcast has been kicking the tires and acquiring WBD. So if you hollow it out, if you really kneecap them, that might be easier to facilitate.
You know, you've been covering this a long time, John. You've seen these rights negotiations play out before. Have you seen something like this in other sports where networks are being so aggressive trying to force the hand of, you know, other potential buyers?
That's a good question. I could probably think of an example if I really dug into the mental hard drive here, but it's hard for me to come up with one right now. I mean, I'm sure it's happened. You know, I mean, well, let's go back. It's not a rights deal, but you go back to, and other people have brought this up, you go back to the Disney-Fox agreement, where Disney had a deal for $52 billion, and then Comcast came in, and Disney ended up having to pay $71 billion. The $52 billion was overvalued. That was a dumb deal that Disney made. Can't believe they made that deal for those Fox properties. And so $52 million was overvalued, and then they ended up paying $71 billion. So that's a great example of that. As far as sports rights go, where a company is just in it to make life miserable for a competitor, there's not a lot of opportunities like this because a lot of the times the rights don't hit the open market, right? And this is kind of where WBD failed. ESPN got out of the exclusive negotiating window with a handshake deal. And now a handshake deal is not a done deal. I mean, it could still fall through, but I imagine that, these are all professionals here, so I would not expect that to happen. But WBD did not exit negotiations, apparently, with a handshake deal, and thus here you are. I mean, to me, that's the biggest failure.
I want to get into some more on the details of these, you know, reported deals or how the packages would look. The thing that really stands out to me, John, when we're talking about the differences between the so-called B package, which is presumably going to WBD or NBC, and the Amazon package, the C package, as it's been dubbed, really, you know, they're getting very similar inventory, yeah, other than All-Star Weekend, right? Am I wrong on that? Because
no, you're right.
With a $700 million difference, like, are you paying $700 million for All-Star Weekend?
No, I mean, like I said, these are rights that almost certainly would have been priced similarly to Amazon's rights, if not for the Comcast bid. And frankly, you can make an argument that Amazon has more valuable package with the in-season tournament and play-in. I mean, you know, the in-season tournament, I know people mocked it, but 4.4, I think it might have been 4.5 million viewers for the title game this year in year one. Granted, that's on ABC. Amazon's going to be having a hard time matching that. But, you know, the All-Star game's not much better than that. You add in all the inventory that comes with the in-season tournament, weeks of games. Then you add the play-in tournament, which it's not going to be every year that LeBron and Steph are in the in-season tournament. It's not going to be many more years that they're in the league. So who knows? Maybe once the LeBron-Steph era ends, you don't have marquee title contenders with big Hall of Fame superstars in the play-in. But certainly, what we have seen from the play-in is pretty good numbers. So,
well, was it clear in the reporting, John, whether Amazon's in-season tournament inventory is going to be, you know, all those Friday games that are included in the in-season tournament, or is this just the games that are in Las Vegas after the fact?
That's a very good question. I assumed the whole in-season tournament, not just the knockout games. You know, Orant said the in-season tournament. He didn't say the knockout games, but sometimes those details can be lost a little bit, maybe.
Well, you know, it would make sense because I believe in his reporting, he said ESPN is dropping its Friday night package, right, as part of their deal. So that would free up, you know, at least one night of those in-season tournament games.
Plus, you know, the NBA is not married to Tuesday and Friday for the in-season tournament. I'm sure they're going to change the format and dates. The interesting thing, though, is you mentioned ESPN dropping its Friday games. This has been reported for months and months. This was always known that ESPN was going to drop the Friday games, keep the Wednesday ones. Not sure why. The Friday games work better with their schedule. There's fewer preemptions with the Friday games, at least early in the year. By the time you get to the late in the season, there's a lot of them. But and the Friday night, I associate Fridays with ESPN much more than Wednesdays. But you know, whatever. I also think Fridays are better for TV ratings in the out-of-home era than Wednesdays are, but that's neither here nor there. The interesting thing is that Amazon is going to be trying to pick up per Orand Saturday games. If Amazon picks up Saturday games, what happens to ABC's Saturday night games? Right? So the NBA, that's another reason why the NBA probably urgently needs to go ahead and get this deal done with Comcast. The NBA does not have a broadcast television partner. It has ABC. If your games are airing on ABC, you don't have a broadcast television partner. ABC, you know, this past weekend prioritized F1 over the NBA. And while F1 did great, a record audience of 3.1 million viewers, that's much less than the NBA would have gotten in that window. And the NBA was confined to a 1 p.m. Eastern slot because ABC was prioritizing Formula One. You got to get off ABC. You got to get a real broadcast television partner, which is certainly NBC.
That kind of leads me to my next question, John, which is, what do you think the league prefers when it comes to their B package? Of course, we've heard a lot of talk about WBD and, of course, their studio show inside the NBA. That's no guarantee to go somewhere if TNT loses the rights. Then, of course, as you just mentioned, on the NBC side, you're getting the broadcast component. So if you're the league office right now, which partner would you rather go with for this package?
Comcast, easily. I mean, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is inside the NBA can be replicated on another network. Now, it can't be replicated with different people, but you can bring in the same people. You can. Everyone's acting like, oh, this is the end of Inside. Obviously, there's no rule that says inside the NBA has to air on TNT or that it has to even be called inside the NBA. People just want Ernie, Kenny, Charles, and Shaq. But let's say inside the NBA ends because of this. Inside the NBA was going to end anyway. They're not going to do this for the rest of their lives, right? And this is an 11-year deal. There is no way that if WBD renews that inside the NBA will still be on in 11 years with the same cast. There's just no way. Charles is going to be over 70 years old. Remember, it's an 11-year deal that starts like after next season. So we're talking 12 years from now. I don't think Charles Barkley is going to be 73 years old sitting next to Shaq. I know Charles says a lot of stuff that he doesn't mean. He said he was going to be the mayor, the governor of Alabama. You know, he said all these things that he never did. And he said repeatedly, well, I don't want to sit next to Shaq and, you know, I'm on my deathbed or whatever. And look, I know that he goes against his word all the time, but I truly do not believe he's going to get to 70 years old and still be sitting next to Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny and Ernie.
Yeah, I do think that the inside the NBA aspect of all of this has been a bit overrated in the media and the coverage of this.
Absolutely.
But I think there's still something to be said about the rest of the, you know, synergies between the NBA and Turner, right? With NBA TV and the digital properties, like we talked a bit about last week. That's something you'll have to rebuild if you opt to go with Comcast. So, John, I guess I'll leave you with this. Ultimately, what do you think is going to happen here? What's your prediction, NBC or TNT?
Well, it's all up to WBD. If they want to match, they can. The price is extremely high, but it's the price of your life. So to me, if you have to overpay to stay alive, that's probably the one time you would overpay, right? I do think WBD would have to match. I mean, the only thing that I can think is that they are unable to match because the matching rights require similar inventory. So obviously, WBD does not have a broadcast network, cannot match what NBC would bring. But I don't really think that the matching rights would be like that. When all is said and done, my expectation is that it'll probably be WBD at a severe overpay, and that that won't be the best outcome for the league. Everyone's like, oh, we got to keep inside the NBA. We got to keep inside the NBA. This is an 11-year deal that would end in 2036. I think it's much more important for the NBA to have a broadcast network partner, not ABC, but a real broadcast network partner, rather than to have inside the NBA, because you can have inside the NBA elsewhere. And, you know, look, I love inside the NBA. I've been watching since before Charles got there, right? I was watching when it was just Ernie and Kenny, and it was great then. Turner is a vastly better partner than ESPN has ever been on its best day, right? And it's a travesty that we have to lose WBD rather than losing ESPN, right? But, I mean, the NBA needs a broadcast network partner. The NBA needs a more secure partner than WBD. It needs a more secure, you know, negotiating partner than Zaslav. And you have an opportunity here to ensure that the NBA's partners are Disney, Comcast, and Amazon. That is rock solid. If your partner is WBD, you're on quicksand, because WBD is on quicksand, and they're on their third different, you know, ownership group in, what, a decade or something. It's obvious to me the only argument for WBD is inside the NBA. And again, you can bring those people onto Amazon. You can bring Ernie, Kenny, Charles. You can bring all the behind-the-scenes people. You can bring Tara August if you want. Like, literally everybody at Turner could be a free agent to either move to Amazon or moonlight at Amazon. You can recreate the magic there. And maybe it won't be the same as it was on TNT, but like, I don't see why you would rule that out. And beyond anything else, if it comes down to talent versus the better business decision, I think you go with the better business decision. Why would you ever want to be locked in for 11 more years with WBD and David Zaslav? This is not AT&T anymore.
Yeah, I think you're completely right, and I agree. There's no telling where WBD ends up in 11 years. There's no telling what linear TV mm-hmm. looks like in 2036, like yeah. you said. So I agree. The safer option, the better business decision, and honestly, the prudent business decision yeah. is to go with Comcast. Of course, we don't know how strong these matching rights are for WBD. Right. We're sure that they will do anything in their power at this point to keep the rights. I mean, we saw Zaslav courtside the day after this NBC reporting dropped. If that doesn't show you how serious they are about keeping the NBA, I'm not sure what really does.
To that point, right? Zaslav is playing catch up. Zaslav is all about public appearances and PR. So he made that statement about we don't have to have the NBA, and now he's, you know, oh, well, no, we do. I'm sitting courtside at the game. There's no Comcast people at the game. You know, when I came back from All-Star Weekend, I said that I didn't see any Comcast people at all. And I took that as a sign that they weren't really interested. Maybe it's a sign that they do their business discreetly, which is not a bad thing. They are discreet. The opposite of that maybe is an indication that Zaslav and WBD are not as serious as maybe they ought to be.
Well, you know, just look at some of Comcast's other recent rights negotiations with, you know, Premier League and, you know, the Kentucky Derby last weekend. Yep. Did we hear anything about either of those deals before they were announced?
Not at all. Exactly. And I'll tell you something. The one thing that I don't look forward to if NBC gets back the rights is having to write about the total audience delivery for NBA games. I am not looking forward to that. Now, having to try to compare NBC's total audience delivery, this metric that is the only network, okay, that's doing this, having to compare that to, well, okay, TNT had this game last year, but it was Nielsen only, but NBC has the Peacock streaming audience as well. I mean, oh my goodness, I'm not looking forward to that. Small price to pay to have the NBA back on broadcast television, real broadcast television and not ABC, but, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Well, maybe that's a good segue to, you know, one of NBC's other properties here, which got a great number over the weekend, and that is the Kentucky Derby. The Saturday race averaged a 7.5 rating and 16.7 million viewers on NBC. That is the largest audience for the event since 1989. Of course, that comes with the standard caveats. A great race, of course, you know, a photo finish between three horses. For my money, that's kind of why, you know, when we're measuring this, I think this number is kind of a function of the television window. And when you have a race that is not clearly decided right when, you know, the first horse crosses the finish line, you're getting a lot of people to stay tuned in for a bit longer than they would otherwise. So, John, what was your take about this record Derby number?
Great number. Obviously, no small number of caveats to it. One, NBC says it's the most watched in 35 years. So that's only if you include their total audience delivery metric. Their argument is that because Nielsen does not measure their streaming viewership, that their TAD is comparable to a linear Nielsen figure. To which I say, just have Nielsen measure your streaming viewership. Get with the program like everybody else has and just have Nielsen do it. But okay, on a Nielsen-only basis, it was only the most watched in 5 years. But let's go ahead and include the TAD. Even on the TAD basis, you go back 5 years, that's before Out of Home. That race, Country Horse, or Country House, I should say, overtaking Maximum Security in the replay review, that race had a 9.4 rating. This year's had a 7.5. Out of home viewing. With out of home viewing included, that 2019 race is probably up at 18, 19, maybe even 20 million. So this was only the most watched in 5 years. This is reminiscent of the NFL, where they're claiming records that are like 30 and 40 years. It's 5 years. It's the most watched in 5 years. And that's still great. But, you know, that 7.5 rating is the fourth lowest for the race since NBC began airing it. So it's probably one of the lesser watched Kentucky Derbies over that span, all things being equal. And, you know, OK, then that's fine. It's still the highest in 5 years. It really doesn't matter how you compare to 2003, only how you compare to everything else on TV. And on that level, it did great. Obviously, more viewers than any NBA or Major League Baseball game since 19. More viewers than any game of the men's NCAA basketball tournament the last 2 years. And for the season, for the year, only football and the NCAA women's title game had a bigger audience. So I think if you're NBC, you're very pleased. But obviously, you know, the great thing about ratings reporting is if you know how to interpret the numbers, then you know. And if you don't, you end up saying stuff like, oh, it was the highest rated Kentucky Derby in 35 years. No, it was actually the highest rated in two, because literally 2 years ago, it had a 7.7. It was the most watched in 35 with a million caveats, and really, honestly, the most watched in five.
I will say anecdotally, I think, and this is obviously borne out in the data, this is a great out-of-home viewing event. Mm-hmm. You know, I was out and about Saturday evening around the start of the Derby, so I didn't catch much of the coverage before the race, but I can say, you know, walking by, you know, restaurants, bars, every TV's tuned into the Derby. Yeah. People are locked in right around post time, and you know, when that race goes off, everyone is watching. So I think it's one of those rare, you know, one-off events on the calendar where you truly do get a bit of the monoculture aspect that has been missing from, you know, American sports viewing.
Well, it doesn't ask a lot out of you. 2 minutes. All right. And the race portion figure that NBC puts out is always like an hour or something. But, you know, it only asks for 2 minutes of your time. And no other sport does that. So that's a big plus. And the gambling factor that I don't really talk about, because I don't believe, like for the NFL, people say, well, it's gambling. I don't believe that. I just don't. Not given the importance of football in this country. I don't believe that if you took gambling out, viewership would decline. I don't believe that it's just gambling or fantasy. With horse racing, I kind of do, because there's no other, it's not like horse racing is popular year round. You know, I do believe the gambling aspect plays a significant role with that, more so than a lot of sports.
100%. And I think it's only been recently where some of the bigger sports books in the United States have started offering horse racing on their platforms. You know, traditionally, you've had to seek other platforms to bet on races, and now you can do it on, the apps that are advertising on every NBA or NFL game, like FanDuel or DraftKings. So I think that is definitely, part of this. And, of course, the sport is built around the gambling culture. Quickly, do you think we will have any carryover momentum for the rest of the Triple Crown, given the good Derby number this year?
No. The Derby is its own animal. The Preakness has been in decline, even with the Derby winner participating. Every year you get to the end of the Derby and the Derby winner's like, well, I don't know if we'll race in the Preakness, which is weird. It used to just be assumed. And now every year the Derby winner either doesn't compete in the Preakness or it's a question. I just don't understand that. I mean, they have to move the Preakness then. 2 weeks obviously does not work anymore. Preakness rights, by the way, we talked about the Derby rights being locked up for another 8 years. Preakness rights have not. John Arand said in his newsletter that they're up after next year. It was interesting, I was trying to figure out when the Preakness rights are up, and I was looking, every single contemporaneous report from 2015 was that it was a 7-year deal. So I don't really know what happened. Either those were all wrong, or there was some kind of mini extension that was not announced or something. I don't know. But the Preakness rights are up after next year. I think Fox takes them. If you're NBC, you either want the Derby or you want all three of them, right? There's no point in having the Derby and the Preakness. The Preakness is just okay. The Preakness is, it's a good event, but it's not, I mean, if you've got the Derby, you've got everything you need. The other thing too, the viewership is really nice, but this is not a sport for the future. We're not going to be able to continue racing horses. Eventually, we're going to have a circumstance like what we had in last year, where a horse dies like right before the finish line. And it's going to happen at the Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont. And it's going to be on like CNN, and they're not going to be able to continue much longer after that. So, yeah, it did nice, but the future is not bright, in my view.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's move on to, some of these NBA playoff numbers, John. I believe you have actually more updated numbers than I have in front of me. So why don't you run us through the weekend games and how the NBA playoffs are shaping up now as we enter round two?
Well, a pretty decent number Saturday night, up 20% for T-Wolves Nuggets. The Timberwolves are embarrassing the Denver Nuggets right now. It's interesting, those who can dish it out and not take it. The Denver Nuggets certainly like to revel in their victories. And now that they're getting a little taste, they are resorting to throwing heat packs on the floor and squaring up with the officials like they're a baseball manager. It's pretty embarrassing stuff from the defending champs. I don't see them lasting very long. But if that series does go long, I think there's a lot of potential in it. And I think Minnesota is emerging as a significant player in the NBA. To the point where I would say right now, the Timberwolves, prisoner of the moment stuff, maybe, but the Timberwolves to me are the team that the NBA would want to come out of the West the most. The comparisons to Michael Jordan for Anthony Edwards, in my view, are frankly stupid. I'm sick and tired of hearing the name Michael Jordan. If we all gather around and say Michael Jordan was the greatest there ever was and ever will be, will you stop talking about him so we can appreciate the players who are there today? Anthony Edwards is great in his own right. We can celebrate him in his own right. Now, of course, he's also playing it up, that shrug. He's playing it up. But I'd like to just appreciate him in his own right before we decide to trash all of his accomplishments because he didn't win 6 titles in 8 years. That's just my personal little thought there. He's electrifying. They're electrifying. It's not just him, though. And they play defense like I haven't seen in a long time. And aesthetically pleasing defense. Not that San Antonio defense with Bruce Bowen, but aesthetically pleasing defense, like what we saw with Rashid and Ben, Tayshaun Prince, all those Pistons from the mid-2000s. So I think if you're the NBA, you want Minnesota to come out of the West. I think that would be the best case scenario. Minnesota, New York, holy smokes. You could actually get a legitimately good NBA Finals matchup from a ratings perspective in a year where all the stars of the past decade went out early or didn't make the playoffs at all.
Yeah, and I'm hoping personally to see, you know, the Thunder and the T-Wolves come out of their series, because I think that is really, I mean, that just puts both those teams on in the spotlight on a huge stage for the NBA. As we've talked about before on the pod, really building up some of these younger players, these younger superstars for the league. I think that just gives them the perfect platform. And you're right, you know, the Knicks kind of look like they could emerge from the East. I think the league would also be fine with the Celtics, though.
Oh, yeah, of course. Celtics-Timberwolves is a great matchup. Knicks or Celtics, just can't be Indiana. Definitely won't be Cleveland.
I don't think we have to worry about that.
I do think you're right, though. OKC Minnesota would be great for the league from a rating standpoint. Maybe not from a rating standpoint, but it would be great for the league, more so than Dallas.
I think
if you can't get, play the hits like the NBA did last year, set the new stars up this year. And if you take a ratings hit, so be it. This reminds me of the 2001 playoffs. One of the interesting things about that game last night, it was 106-80. So I'm going to do this straight off the top of my head. You can double check if I'm correct. I believe the Charlotte Hornets beat the Miami Heat 106-80 in potentially both games 1 and 2 of their first round series in 2001, right? Because the Hornets did beat the Heat by 26 points in game 1 and game 2 on the road, and then finished off the 3-game sweep with a 15-point win, probably 94-79 in game 3, right? And I bring this up for a reason. Were they both 106-80?
It was 106-80 in game 1.
Yeah.
Game 2 is 102-76, and then you also nailed game 3, which is 94-79.
Yeah. You don't forget scores like that, right? So,
incredible.
The point being, that was a changing of the guard in the NBA. The Heat had been a perennial contender. The Heat and the Knicks were knocked out in the first round that year. And the second round was mostly new teams. Charlotte, Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly. And that was the end of the 90s in the NBA, that 2001 playoffs. It was the end of those 90s teams. That's what I think we are seeing right now, is the end of an era in the NBA. And it's fine. Look, you know, a lot of people have complained about LeBron and Steph. LeBron and Durant. They've not complained about Steph. Which is unfortunate, because LeBron is one of the greatest players of all time. And, you know, all the debating about him has been sickening, rather than appreciating, just debating. But it's also good to move on to new things. I would expect LeBron, Steph, KD to stick around. But let's see some new blood, right? It's about time we saw a little new blood in the game. And I think that when all is said and done, the ratings will take a hit, a significant hit, probably in the second round, because people are not used to these folks. But if the numbers are just decent and you have new people creating new stars, so that when LeBron and Steph and all those guys retire in the next 5 years, you don't fall off a cliff, I think you take it.
Okay, let's move on to the Stanley Cup playoffs, because we have some strong numbers out of there. The weekend had a pair of Game 7s, one Saturday, one Sunday. Saturday's Maple Leafs-Bruins game is the most watched first-round game in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 12 years. 3.24 million viewers on ABC. A big number for the NHL. What are your top-line takeaways from the weekend in hockey?
Well, I think it was a great weekend for the NHL. I mean, obviously, to set a viewership mark like that, I do think maybe the hopes were a little bit higher for that Bruins Leafs game that would get maybe to closer to 4 million, but that's a tough ask with no lead in. But I think it did well. I actually was thinking that the NHL might get a better game 7 number than the NBA. Did not work out that way. The Magic Cleveland game the following day, despite a less interesting matchup and earlier time slot, was over 4 million, but I mean, if you're hockey, you're feeling good. You have the Bruins in there. You're close to New York, Boston, and both the NHL and NBA, and they'll feed off each other. Both will benefit from the fact that you have Bruins, Rangers, and Celtics, Knicks. Like, that's going to be a thing that people talk about. So, obviously the Western Conference, I mean, you've got Oilers, Canucks. That's just not going to do anything for you. But if you're the NHL, it could go two ways. Boston, New York, or Carolina, Florida. And man, I mean, that's feast or famine. I know the Bruins won easily in game one and the Rangers won easily in game one. So you're getting close to the best case scenario. And, just like the NBA, the bar is low. The bar is low for getting to a 5-year high. I think both the NBA and NHL Stanley Cup and NBA Finals will get to 5-year highs this year at least. There's got to be a little bit better scheduling. I don't know why they put 2 ABC game windows on and they didn't necessarily know they would have games to fill those windows. The NBA always makes sure that the ABC windows will have a game filled. So I do think they need to work on that because ABC ended up hearing what? SportsCenter instead? I mean, that doesn't benefit ABC. Certainly does not benefit the NHL. So they got to do a better job of ensuring that ABC has a game. But the NHL's flexibility is also its strength because they were able to capitalize on the lack of an ESPN NBA window on Sunday. ESPN was supposed to air an NBA game at 3:30. They snuck in Carolina, New York there instead.
Great point. And that is interesting that they don't have a plan to fill every single one of those broadcast windows on ABC, similar to the NBA. That is actually a surprise to me. I did not realize that.
Well, the NHL has always been much more, flexible and, not set in stone with their games. And partly because the NBA is set in stone and we know the NBA has the higher place on the hierarchy. So the NHL kind of has to work around the NBA sometimes. I mean, sometimes it works out in reverse as well. But I do think that that's a factor.
All right, John, we got a handful of quick hitters here to close out the show. We'll try to run through these expeditiously. All right. First up, NBC has announced its broadcast plans for the U.S. Open. This was up in the air considering they have not yet named a permanent lead analyst on their golf team. And they've decided to do something pretty unorthodox. They are going to have 2 lead teams, one to call the even holes, one to call the odd numbered holes. Dan Hicks and Brandel Chamblee will be taking the even holes. So that means they'll get the 18th and final hole on Sunday. And then Mike Tirico and Brad Faxon on the odd number holes. A strange decision in my book, very just non-committal from NBC. I think it kind of signals that they really don't have a plan in place to replace Paul Azinger, who they did not end up re-signing late last year. Luke Donald will, in fact, be in the lead analyst chair for their next major, which is the British Open in July. So very strange times over there at NBC Golf.
Yeah, well, you got to keep in mind, I mean, it's hard to fill the vacancy left by Johnny Miller. That's really what all this is. And it's golf. It's not massively popular, and it's not like the audience is going to tune out. And I don't necessarily know how important the lead analyst is for golf in the same way as it is for other sports, because you have all these other analysts at all these other holes throughout. So, it is what it is. And I think for NBC, it doesn't seem like it's kind of like the Daily Show, where it was like, you know what? Do we really need to fill this host vacancy? We know this show is not necessarily lighting it up in the ratings. And why bother to go through all this trouble when we've got passable people that we can have do it every now and again? And hey, maybe we can get Jon Stewart to do one night a week.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the mentality over there right now. It's not like it's going to demonstrably impact the ratings. If you're a golf fan that's going to tune in for the U.S. Open, you don't really care who is, you know, sitting in the lead analyst chair, unless it is a legend like Johnny Miller. So this is kind of, this seems to be the standard operating procedure now over at NBC. Obviously something to keep an eye on and to see if they ever do in fact name a permanent replacement for Azinger, but for now they are continuing the rotation. All right, next on the list for quick hitters, we have MLB closing in on a deal with Roku for that Sunday morning package that Peacock gave up mid-season.
Yeah, I mean, this is from Andrew Marchand last week. It sounds worse than it is. I mean, Roku is more available than Peacock. The Roku channel is available for free. I believe it's available across platforms. I was able to get it on my computer. Not sure if there's an app you can get on Apple TV or whatnot. Baseball is in an interesting spot because their rights don't appear to be valued by anybody. The NBA is on the doorstep of this insane $75 billion deal, $7 billion a year. And Major League Baseball can't get Comcast to just pay up 30. Comcast is going to pay $2.5 billion a year for NBA rights that are thoroughly unimpressive. And they didn't want to pay more than $10 million for one Sunday night, Sunday morning baseball game a week. $10 million? I mean, that's absurd. So baseball, I think, needs to figure out a way to get the networks to value its rights more. Obviously, those Sunday morning windows must be putting up pretty dreadful numbers if Comcast is going to say we are only willing to pay $10 million for it. I mean, that's couch cushion money.
I kind of like this from Major League Baseball, just as a alternative to the Peacock package. You know, Roku is just a lot more accessible. It's not your traditional streaming service. So, you know, you're not paying for it in the same way you'd be subscribing to Peacock. At least that's my understanding of this deal. You won't have to purchase anything. You'll view it the same way you can view, you know, the Rich Eisen show. I think the kind of platformers, you know, like these Rokus, are pretty underrated when it comes to the acquisition of sports, live sports rights, and even shoulder programming, like I mentioned, Rich Eisen. And, you know, it is convenient for the consumer. So I'd like to see more of that into the future.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think with baseball, it's going to have to get creative. You know, they were thinking about Barstool a few years ago, if you remember that.
Yeah.
How about, I don't know what his financial situation is like, but how about John Boy? Doesn't John Boy do sports? Like, I mean, it's like some kind of weird cricket or some kind of beer league softball thing that he's doing where he's streaming it. I imagine he's probably up at the seven figure total by now. I mean, maybe not immediately, but down the line. Yeah. Maybe you start to see some John Boy streams of actual Major League Baseball games.
Yeah. I know they have some sort of arrangement with Yes Network. Not sure if that's during the live broadcasts or more of studio work that they do. But I know John Boy is involved in some way, or at least has been in the past with Yes. I don't want to say it's still ongoing because I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Next on the list, we have Michael Irvin's ouster at NFL Network. The league continues its cost-cutting maneuvers for NFL media. This was first reported by Ryan Glass-Spiegel of the New York Post on Friday. That ends Michael Irvin's 15-year tenure at the network.
Yeah, well, first, congratulations to Ryan Glass-Spiegel for keeping the New York Post relevant in this space despite Andrew Marchand's exit. Didn't think we'd have any more New York Post scoops after Marchand left. This is an interesting move. Obviously, Michael Irvin must have rubbed people the wrong way. They suspended him for basically a year over those claims of impropriety from the hotel. Irvin, obviously, is their highest profile guy, but probably pretty expensive, too. And if ESPN is willing to give up Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, it shouldn't be too surprising that NFL Network is willing to give up Michael Irvin. I think... they're getting rid of NFL Total Access. I mean, who even knows what the future is of this? Clearly, the NFL does not value having a fully staffed marquee media network the way that people thought, because they have just been, despite the fact that they are fine financially, they have just been just decimating this enterprise.
You got to think Irvin will end up somewhere this upcoming season, right?
Yeah, well, FS1 is nowhere, and that seems to be his only option.
Will be interesting to see if we See him on the airwaves of any pregame shows. I feel like he's just too big of a name to leave out there in the ether.
We did not discuss, by the way, you brought up pregame shows, the CBS overhaul of the NFL today. They got rid of Sims, they got rid of Boomer Esiason, and probably the right move. I'm surprised they kept Cowher. I think they, you know, the youth movement probably needs to be complete. Obviously, James Brown has earned the right to decide when he leaves CBS. He's been there so long, left for Fox for a little bit, but his CBS ties go so far back. He was doing the NBA for CBS for many years in the 80s. So he's earned the right to decide when he leaves. But that youth movement needs to be total. The future of that show is Nate Burleson hosting, probably Watt, Matt Ryan, some other young guys. But they need to outmaneuver Fox. Fox was always a young, spry studio team. They are not anymore. That studio team over at Fox is very older skewing. So if you're CBS, you want to sneak in and undercut them with a lot of youth. Also want to sneak this in, Prime officially announcing today that Dale Earnhardt Jr. is joining their NASCAR booth. That just coming out really as I'm talking here on Tuesday morning. And Dale will also do TNT.
There you go.
Starting next year. So that was already reported. I don't remember by who, but not a surprise, but officially announced.
John, two more quick ones here. First, Monday Night Football scaling back its inventory on ABC this upcoming season. This was widely anticipated. Now it's confirmed. Going to be interesting to see those press releases out of ESPN PR this year.
Well, they're not going to be many of them because their viewership is going to be down significantly throughout. This was a move that I guess was inevitable. It's too bad for the NFL because they're pretty much guaranteed now a decline in viewership this season. We'll see. I mean, that'll probably not really be a big deal, but if there's a single player who like raises a fist during the national anthem or something, then it'll become a story. Look, I mean, it is what it is. The other networks were not pleased. You got to remember, ratings are not everything. If ratings were everything, people would have been on Thursday Night Football. They didn't. Ratings are not everything. So the fact that ABC came in with this extra inventory, you got to remember, they're selling access to viewers. So if there's suddenly tons more impressions in the marketplace, then that's not going to be great for the networks because they're trying to sell on the relative scarcity of those types of audiences. So the fact that the viewership was up actually hurt the bottom line. And so it's better to not have those games on ABC, even though obviously we'll take a ratings hit. Ratings are not everything. That's what we are seeing in all of these media rights deals, certainly the NBA's. I take a little bit of responsibility for the fact that people do think ratings are everything, as I said last week, but they are most certainly not.
All right, last one here, John. WNBA tips off their season soon. They're currently in the preseason. Of course, we're all excited to see what kind of numbers Caitlin Clark does in her opening game. What are your predictions for WNBA openers?
Well, we're taping Tuesday, so a week from today is Caitlin Clark's first game against the Connecticut Sun. ESPN2 right now. If Boston sweeps Florida in the NHL, then maybe ESPN. But that's going to be a very interesting night of television ratings for certain. I think, obviously, the interest level is crazy high, not just in Caitlin Clark. There were a lot of people upset that Angel Reese's debut was not streamed. The WNBA was not prepared for this, right? So right off the bat, the WNBA not prepared for its own windfall. Not surprising to me, given the WNBA not necessarily being the best at a lot of things to promote itself. There was no preparation for the level of interest in preseason games. If there had been, Caitlin Clark's preseason game would have been televised on a Nielsen-rated network, and Angel Reese's would have at least been streamed, but there was just no expectation. They just were caught flat-footed, as they have so often been. So the whole business of, like, I don't know how many people were streaming someone's cell phone footage of the game. I mean, it was kind of crazy.
All right, John, we covered a lot today. Been going on about an hour here, so let's go ahead and wrap up the show.
All right, yeah, and just to reiterate with the F1 audience, biggest F1 audience ever in the U.S., obviously the NBA lead-in is a big, big reason for that. Not just an NBA lead-in, but an NBA Game 7. Even Orlando-Cleveland is still an NBA Game 7. So a little bit of a caveat there. Did beat NASCAR, which was rain delayed on FS1. Interesting weekend. We'll be back with more talk next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.